Oh, I suppose I could stretch this sermon into making it seem like it was on the advertised topic, but the truth is it's not. On the other hand, the hymns fit perfectly because they talked about what kind of world we have and what kind of world we are going to build with and for each other. I was struck, as I'm sure many of you were, about a week ago at that courthouse shooting out in front of Van Nuys, where a crazed gunman pulled out a pistol and started shooting at a lawyer, and it wasn't even his lawyer. And the lawyer is playing this deadly game of hide-and-seek using a tree while dodging the bullets. And I'm sitting there wondering, is this fiction? Is this real? What is going on here? I'm seeing a life and death, full contact game of tag going on with guns. And several startling and remarkable things occurred to me during the watching, well, actually the endless watching of this news loop. The first one was, of course, the shock and all of the normal reactions of what is this guy doing with a gun, and then there was the distance, is this really happening? And then I noticed something, and I thought about something else. I noticed that in the view that I was seeing, I could see other cameramen standing there with cameras shooting the same event. And then I realized, of course, the eyes with which I was looking at the event were also behind a cameraman who was standing there with bullets flying and a madman firing a gun and wasn't doing any of the things that I would consider to be the normal things to do when you see somebody shooting a gun. Now, not being a person of vast military police training, my first instinct, I think, would have been to flee. My flight reaction and hormones seem to overpower my fight hormones most of the time, and I'm just as glad. The other natural reaction would have been to intervene and to tackle the guy and to try to save the life of the guy who was being shot. After all, they didn't know he was a lawyer. I can only say this since my middle and beloved son is a lawyer, so it's not a generic put-down. No, it is a generic put-down. It's not personal. It's a cheap joke is what it is. So, I mean, I can understand intervening. I can understand fleeing. I can understand one more human reaction, and that is paralysis. Just standing there. But after the gunman finished shooting, or so apparently all of these camera, and I only saw men, so I'm being gender specific on this. I suspect women might not be this stupid. Some might. I don't want to offend anybody. But most, I think, probably would not. So the gunman puts away his gun and calmly but purposely starts walking away. And what happens? All of the cameramen follow him. And we're seeing them walking like this, and they don't know that the gun is empty. Maybe it's not a six-shooter or an eight-shooter. Maybe it's a 12-shooter. They don't know that he doesn't have another clip. They don't know that he, in fact, has another loaded gun in his pocket and could have pulled out the gun and say, oh, camera person. He being less gender specific than I. And so they just go along. Well, that to me was so remarkable. It's what didn't happen. It's like the dogs not barking in the Sherlock Holmes story of the Silver Blaze. I mean, they didn't run. They didn't intervene. They didn't flee. They acted as if they were invisible and not a part of the story. This is objectivity. Was it bravery? Did they say, there are bullets flying and I don't care because I'm doing my job? Maybe. I wonder whether any adrenaline pumped at all or whether there was a cloak of invisibility that they had developed of not being a part of the story, a distancing from the reality and the pain and the vulnerability of all human beings in this world, including their own, because they were as vulnerable as anyone, with the possible exception of the attorney, because bullets were flying all around the place as they're chasing this ring around the rosy using a tree in the middle. What allows us, not media, but us as human beings, to create this kind of invisibility for ourselves, and sometimes invisibility and depersonalization of the pain and the vulnerability of the other? This is not going to be a screed against the media. I think that all of us in some ways do what those cameramen do. And it is understandable to some extent that we do it, because the pain of the world is overpowering. But we have a greater responsibility. In another incident during the earthquake in Northridge, an apartment had collapsed, and somebody from a newspaper, the LA Times, showed up with a camera, and people were frantically trying to dig out the survivors. And one of the people who was supervising the dig said to the photojournalist, "Put down the camera and help." And the journalist said, "I can't. I'm part of the media. I can't be involved." And the man said, pulled out a gun and said, "You are a human being first. Help or leave or die." Now, that's a little extreme, okay? But I can understand how the adrenaline going through the rescuers is a little bit disturbed by the idea of, I'm not a participant, I'm above it all. I'm just a non-participant observer. I am subject to the prime directive of not interfering with the histories of these little people down here on the planet. Well, I do understand part of the mechanism. I understand how when we go to a place of great poverty, whether usually a place that we haven't been before because we don't see the great poverty that we step over in our own communities every day, but we see poverty in a new key, on a new channel, through a new medium, we are shocked. When we're panhandled every 30, 40 feet aggressively in San Francisco, when we see the poverty in Mexico City, and when we see it in India and Pakistan and other places in the world, it is shocking at first. And as a natural defense mechanism, we start distancing. We start stepping backwards a little bit. Our filters start kicking in so that we don't quite see, we see beggars, we don't really see people. We see problems and we see threats. We don't really see individuals. It's an almost inevitable automatic process. It is a retreat, a defense to preserve the ego, to keep us out of the story. We can't take on all of the pain of the world or we would go mad. We can't take our own experiences of tragedy and of loss and multiply it by the number of strangers whose plights are terrible, and so we build up these layers of insulation. We impose these filters. But every once in a while, it is good just to be jolted out of that automatic process and wonder at how automatically it becomes a part of us, that these cameramen couldn't see either the tortured humanity of the shooter or the terrible vulnerability of the victim or even their own vulnerability, that there were these distances, this dissociation from the reality of the world. And the choice is not between feeling it all and being overwhelmed. and feeling none of it and staying away and trying to have an ideal of objectivity, which is a fiction, I think that there are many, not only middle grounds to take, but to accept that we are all right a pendulum of involvement and retreat as our own spirits and souls and selves need. I don't know what I would have done in the situation of those cameramen. I don't even know what it would have been right to do. I'm glad that there was a reserve officer, lawyer, and judge pro tem who tackled him and took him down, and that ultimately the outcome, at least physically, was not a tragedy on either side. But I don't know what to do about our filters and about how we can better see what is going on in the world and engage it, not from on high in some lofty position of superiority, but human being to human being, eye to eye, soul to soul. In the last month, I saw two motion pictures that touched me. One, an art house movie that you would expect me to go to, of course. It's probably deductible, being an art house movie and being an arty type. And that was Dirty Pretty Things, that talked and showed all the stories of the people we don't see, the people who make our lives not simply easier, but often possible, who clean our houses and tend our gardens and our children and work in our hospitals and service us sexually. That's a grand us, not me, not you, of course, but in the grand sense of the word. The end of the movie, one of the mainstream characters says, "I don't recognize any of you people. I haven't seen you before." And the response is, "Yeah, you have. You just didn't see us. We're the people who take care of you, but you don't see us." And there's so many that we don't see, that we just step over in the doorways and on the streets. The damaged, the hurt, the unlucky. And as Dickens asks in the Christmas reading every year, for us to see these people not as separate creatures on separate journeys, but fellow passengers to the grave, as our sisters and our brothers. The other movie that we went to on small mass on Tuesday night was Radio, with Cuba Gooding. Not a brilliant movie that will live forever, but an extraordinary acting job and something really touching and true. The beginning of the movie, this character deeply emotionally damaged, intellectually challenged as well, is just a thing to be either feared or mocked. Humanity, his inherent worth and dignity, not seen, not acknowledged, not treated with any sense of respect for his humanity. But one person starts to see a person in there, a fellow human being, and there's a change. And the character comes out of his shell, not to some saccharine normalcy, not to reveal the genius underneath, not to go on to win the Nobel Prize, but just to be more fully recognized as a human being. And that fact of recognition, the fact that he then is treated with some dignity, that somebody sees that there's more than just this problem person, brings him out to the point where he can experience joy, experience enthusiasm and bonding, and give joy and give pleasure and be a source of inspiration to others within his own limited capacity. And it all starts when somebody decides to say hello in there, to see a human being inside there. And there are just so many ways in our world that we create distance, that we shut out the pain, and we shut out the humanity to protect ourselves. But it also causes damage to the people from whose eyes and souls and lives we avert our eyes and our attention and our lives. Christopher Isherwood wrote Cabaret, and it began as a book called I Am a Camera, which pretended to a certain non-participant observer status in the decadent Berlin of the late 20s and early 30s, where he was only recording and not judging. It's not a journalistic ideal. It's not a humanistic ideal. It's not an ideal. We can't feel all the pain. We have to feel some. We can't acknowledge fully and deeply the same extent the personal losses in our lives to strangers out there. We have to make those strangers just a little more personal, just a little bit closer, just a little more clearly human beings and not simply problems. I don't know what the balance is for me. I certainly don't know what the balance is for you. This is not one of those judgment things. This is a request to think about, from time to time, what is going on inside the other. We make so many people the other. We make people of different races, of different religions, of different classes, of different IQs, of different mental abilities, the other, something wholly different, or usually unwholly different to us. And so we fear it and turn it into a problem instead of seeing the person. I don't know, ultimately, how to be except what the first step is. And the first step is to remind ourselves as often as we can that we do not stand apart. God-like, camera-like, media-like, far distant and invisible from the world in which we live. I think the first step is to put ourselves in the picture and feel it and know it and accept our role as a part of a greater world.